Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 11.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The Sergeant at Arms will close the doors. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This morning's prayer will be offered by Representative McNeely. We'd ask everyone in the on the floor and in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative McNeely.
Let's bow our heads. Dear Heavenly Father, I humbly bow before you, praise your name, and thank you for the many blessings that you have bestowed upon this center. Lord, I pray that you give us guidance as we make decisions for your people of the great state of North Carolina. Let us be strong, but not rude or overbearing. Let us be kind, but not weak. Let us be humble, but not timid. Let us be proud, but not arrogant. Lord, let us grow closer each day to act and love like your Son, our Savior, Jesus Christ. Father, I pray that you watch over us and our families as we have to spend time away from them in this session. I pray that you be with those of us who are sick or who may have this virus. Please help us get this vaccine to our people and that it protects them. I thank you, Lord, that my family and I made it through having the virus and that we have regained our health. Praise Jesus. Dear God, please forgive us of our many transgressions as a nation founded on Christian principles. I'm sorry that we have strayed so far from your righteousness. Please, Lord, do not make our punishment as harsh as the sins we have committed. Thank you, Father, for giving us your Son, Jesus Christ, who died on the cross so that our sins may be forgiven through the sacrifice of his pure and precious blood. All we have to do is confess and repent, and eternal life with you in heaven is ours. I pray for the protection for all who serve and protect us both here and abroad. I pray for our republic, our nation, and may we realize how blessed we are to be an American. I especially pray for all who are trapped by fashion to only exist in black, blue, and gray. May you free them of this yoke and allow a little sunshine like myself to spread upon their path. I pray all this in your precious Son, Jesus Christ's name, and all of his people said, Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal from February 10th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for February 10th to be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Representative Hurley is recognized. Send forth committee report. Corporal Reed.
Representative Hurley, Education, Community College Committee report. House Bill 38, Board of Trustees, Isothermal Community Colleges, Fable, and referred to Rules Calendar and Operations of the House.
Bills referred to the Committee on Rules Calendar and Operations of the House. Members, we're momentarily going to go into recess. While we're in recess, Chair is going to direct that the introductions, bills, and resolutions be read during that recess period. Representative Bell, gentlemen, would like to make an announcement. Gentleman has the floor for that purpose.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Immediately upon recess, Republicans will caucus in room 643. Please be prompt.
Any further notices or announcements? If not subject to the standard stipulations, the chair is going to declare that the House is going to sit in recess until 10:30. House will be in recess until 10:30.
Introduction of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
Representatives Hurley and Lucas, House Bill 65, Alcoholic Beverage Control Administrative Penalties, Program Evaluation Division Study.
Refer to the Alcoholic Beverage Control, if favorable, rules, calendar operations of the House.
Representatives Bowles and McNeil, House Bill 66, Expand Eligibility for Utility Account.
Refer to Commerce, if favorable, rules, calendar, and operations of the House.
Representative Davis, House Bill 67, General Statutes Commission, Technical Corrections, 2021.
Judiciary 1, if favorable, rules, calendar, and operations of the House.
Representative Davis, House Bill 68, General Statutes Commission, Licensing Board, and Commissions, Rule Crimes.
State Government, if favorable, Judiciary 1, if favorable, rules, calendar, and operations of the House.
Representatives Elmore, Howard, Sasser, and Reeves, House Bill 69, Education on the Holocaust and Genocide.
Refer to the Committee on Education, K-12, if favorable, rules, calendar, and operations of the House.
Representatives Adams, Kristen Baker, Hodister, and Warren, House Bill 70, Historic School Preservation Act.
Finance, if favorable, rules, calendar, and operations of the House.
House will come back to order. Senate Bill 37, the clerk will read.
Senators Ballard, Lee, and Heiss, Senate Bill 37, a bill to be entitled an act to provide access to in-person learning for students in grades kindergarten through 12, Johnson of North Carolina Acts.
Representative Bradford, does the gentleman want to explain the bill first, or does the gentleman want to send forth the amendment first? This is the gentleman's choice.
Explain the bill first. The
gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House. You know, we do good work up here, and I'm honored to run this bill because I think this could be one of the most important things that we do in the 2020-2021 legislative session. I do have an amendment to bring forth, but let me first at least start with, you know, sort of the bill summary. Obviously, this bill is essentially to reopen our schools, but it's to do it in an in-person option with parents having a choice. And so this bill would require all LEAs to offer in-person instruction to students in grades kindergarten through 12 for the remainder of the 2020-2021 academic school year. The bill would require that local boards require to comply with the toolkit requirements for Plan A and Plan B as the guidance existed in the most recent toolkit guidance, which is dated February 2nd. Local boards are going to be required to offer in-person instruction under Plan A to all education students, special education students, which means students with an individualized education program or Section 504 plan, unless the plan prohibits specifically in-person instruction. As a reminder, parents would have the discretion to elect to still send those students in a participate in a remote instruction if needed. Local boards would be required to offer in-person instruction under Plan A or Plan B to all other students. And again, parents would have the discretion to elect for those students to participate in remote instruction as an alternative. Local boards could adjust student assignments to comply with the in-person instruction requirements. And then local boards still have the ability to make day-to-day decisions on any shifts of individual classrooms and schools from in-person to remote instruction when needed due to any COVID-19 exposures that result in insufficient school personnel or required student quarantines. Folks, there's a myriad of data studies that support that we can reopen our schools safely. In fact, If you actually hopefully took the time to read the bill on lines 4 through 26, where it has all those fancy whereas words, there's a plethora of data that supports this bill. I don't need to read it to you. I hope you will take the time to read it. The governor has said that he wants to reopen schools. The Biden administration has said they'd like to reopen schools. I think this legislation really delivers on that shared priority. And so that is why we're bringing this bill for you today. Just know that school closures are not just an education crisis. They truly represent economic and mental health crises that are hurting struggling families across North Carolina. Closed classrooms hurt the most vulnerable, low-income students the most. Many affluent students are not facing the same challenges faced by the less advantaged students. Special education students are hit particularly hard by school closures. Safely reopening schools is very important to the most at-risk children. This legislation guarantees that families with special needs allow their children to return to the classroom if the parents so choose. The school system in North Carolina has adequate funding to reopen safely. As we all know, there's $1.6 billion that each school system received for K-12 funding in February, so there's money is there. And this legislature has a fully funded per-pupil allotment and salaries and has promised to hold harmless education budgets regardless of any enrollment drops. Virtual dropouts are leaving many students who basically need help because they're being unaccounted for. And then child abuse reports are down. I find this particularly interesting. Child abuse reports are down because kids are out of school. And even though studies show domestic violence is on the rise, we all know that schools are often a major source of reporting abuse. Now, this is creating a tragic problem that we cannot allow to continue. Now, just a few more, Mr. Speaker. Student suicides and indicators of psychological crises in children are raising concerns about the hidden costs of school closures on mental health. Parents of struggling students are having to pull them out of remote learning to seek other education options because they're impacting families economically with higher costs of limited access to the parents' working ability. North Carolina has one of the most strictest classroom closure states in the country, and most states are giving LEAs more flexibility than we are, which is what this bill seeks to do. Some LEAs have already opened, by the way. They're already doing this. So this bill, they're already doing it. So I think it's important that some LEAs are doing Plan A and Plan B or combination thereof. So there's already a precedent that this is good policy. And then, of course, yesterday the governor announced that February 24th is the date where Group 3 on the prioritization for vaccines will be available for the vaccines, and they have moved to the front of Group 3, anyone in child care, specifically pre-K through 12. That said, Mr. Speaker, I would like to bring forth an amendment.
The gentleman's recognized. Send forth amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Bradford moves to amend the bill on page 2, lines 48 through 49, by inserting the following between these lines.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you. So for clarity, this is simply a clarifying amendment. It just clears up some confusion with some superintendent issues that we heard about, largely based on an incorrect email, in my opinion. But nonetheless, I'm always happy to try to create more clarifying language where possible. This amendment was actually something that was worked on. We talk a lot about bipartisanship up here, and in this case, I absolutely mean it. And I think it's important to know that this amendment is addressing a section that was added during Rules Committee after working with the Minority Leader and Representative Clemens and a few other folks, Representative Bell, both sides, and even the Senate bill sponsors, to try to address a concern. The root cause of why this language was put in the bill that this amendment is going to address was because an example was given where if we're going to require teachers to come back to the classroom, as this bill sets forth, what about those teachers that may have a child at home? An example I think that was used was a child with like cystic fibrosis. So a child with cystic fibrosis is an at-risk individual, but they are currently categorized under the group prioritization of vaccines as group 4. A teacher, as we found out yesterday, we already know was in group 3, but they're going to move to the front of line group 3. So the teacher, the parent in this example, could likely be vaccinated before their child. In fact, that's probably a very likely scenario. So if the teacher's going to and from school working, are they going to expose their child because they're going into the classroom despite their vaccination while their child at home is at risk? And so under federal law, by the way, there's this little thing under the ADA. Everybody knows the ADA, hopefully, and the ADA has this thing for reasonable accommodations, okay? And we don't want to do redundant work here because states while we have our own sovereignty, we must follow federal law. So already today, what exists is that employers must work with their employees if they seek a reasonable accommodation for employment. The employer has an obligation, if in fact the reasonable accommodation is affirmed to exist, to do their best to accommodate that individual. That does not, though, translate to a windfall effect where that person gets to just stay home and not work, although working virtually could be a type of accommodation. It could include other types of accommodations, such as allowing that person to use a less popular entrance at the school. Rather than the main entrance, maybe they use a side entrance. Or maybe that classroom is cleaned a little more frequently. There's all kinds of ways an employer can try to work with someone regarding their accommodation request. That's already federal law, so nothing really changes about that with what we're trying to do here. That said, though, federal law talks about the individual with the disability. It does not really cover the individual's child or the minor that they're the direct caretaker of. So this was a good faith effort. The language that we put in the bill yesterday, and even Representative Adcock, while it was not her amendment, she very quickly, because of her background, made a change that we quickly agreed with, and so we accepted that, again, showing that we're working with both sides of the aisle here. And really what this does is this just expands the fact that reasonable accommodations could be submitted by a teacher, not only for themselves, but even perhaps for a child. Again, though, let me be clear, it doesn't mean that it's going to get approved. It just means the employer has a responsibility to try to accommodate them. Okay, that's what it's doing. The other thing we're doing in the language in the bill is under the ADA, they're set forth a list of disabilities. This does also now bring in the CDC categories. If you notice, the language in the bill has two sort of paragraphs that almost look identical, and you may have sort of struggled to see what's the difference. Well, the difference is the first paragraph in that language that we've passed in rules yesterday is addressing the Category 1 underlying health conditions of the CDC guidance that says these are at-risk conditions. There's another section, I'll call it Category 2, of things that may be at risk. So the language in the bill was just addressing those two buckets. Now, all that said, because an email went out to a bunch of superintendents that got everybody worked up, and your superintendents may have been one of them, which is perfectly acceptable and understandable, that is why I'm bringing forth this clarifying amendment. It just makes it clear that employers, as already stated in federal law, they do not have to grant reasonable accommodations, they just have to consider them, which is really the way it works already. But I think that's bringing everyone back to understanding what this was trying to do. So it's a clarifying amendment. I've talked with Representative Adcock. Would appreciate your support on the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
So the chair is in receipt of a number of amendments from members, and so I would ask that members who are wishing to debate the amendment or ask questions on the amendment seek recognition. For what purpose does the lady from Lake, Representative Gill, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand in support of the clarifying
amendment. Please recognize to debate the amendment.
I'm sorry. I do want to debate the amendment. I stand to support the clarifying amendment and ask that everyone vote for it.
And the chair is going to intend to take the amendment votes by voice vote today, just in the interest of time, since there are so many. Further discussion, further debate on the amendment. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Any opinion of the chair? The ayes have it. The ayes do have it. And Amendment A1 is adopted. Representative Adcock is recognized to send forth Amendment ABN 12B2. Clerk will read.
Representative Adcock moves to amend the bill on page 3, lines 3 through 4, by rewriting those lines to read.
Lady from Lake has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are several things in this bill that are really worth supporting, and there are several things in it that could make it a stronger bill that I think everyone in the chamber could support. I hope that this is one of the amendments that would make the bill stronger and more reasonable. This bill simply would change the reporting period for any time there's a shift by the school or classroom from in-person to remote instruction from 3 days, 72 hours, to weekly. And I would say that actually longer than a week would be even better for the school systems, but after input from the different superintendents, we believe at least weekly would be more reasonable, and I would ask for your support of this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wilkes, Representative Elmore, rise?
To speak to the amendment. The
gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
With the amendment, I feel like that it is unnecessary. I know that the superintendents would like an extension of a couple of days, but with what we're trying to do with dealing with Corona, dealing with COVID-19, and the structure that's set up in this bill, it basically takes a structure where you may have to quarantine a school because it develops into a cluster. What this reporting is notifying DPI that that's happened. Currently, the information that we're getting on school closures and the actions that each system has taken is through the School Boards Association, which uses a Google Doc, which is almost instantaneous information. So the idea of the systems not being able to report this important information, especially if you have a system that might get into a situation where they have four or five clusters that have popped up, and four or five schools have had to close because of it, we need that information about as quick as possible. So not only could the governor's office react knowing that information, or we could react, or DPI could react. So information is powerful, and in this digital age, I don't think that it's necessary at all to extend this reporting period beyond the 72 hours that's in the bill. So I would urge you to not support the amendment.
For what purpose, lady from Wake, Representative Adcock Rice?
Speak to the amendment a second time.
The lady has the floor.
I understand what Representative Elmore is saying, and I think he actually makes my point, that if you have an cluster outbreak in your school, you have a lot of things to think about, both as a school principal, as a superintendent of that district, so many things to do that filing a report is not unimportant, but taking care of people is most important. And those would be your teachers, your staff, and your students. I think asking basically for another 2 working days to file that report is a reasonable request and would make this bill stronger. Thank you. I would appreciate it if you would vote green on this amendment.
Further discussion? Further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A2, sent forward by Representative Adcock. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. The noes do have it. The amendment fails. Waiting for side, for Representative Baker is recognized and forth Amendment ATC 16. Corporal Reed.
Representative Baker moves to amend the bill on page 2, lines 15 through 25, by rewriting those lines to read.
Lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to solicit support for this amendment. As a veteran teacher of 25 years, there is no area of education that I have not touched, from elementary, middle, high, public, private, charter. And most recently, I have the unique perspective of serving as both an administrator and now a classroom teacher in a secondary setting. In our district, we have been on a hybrid schedule for about a month now. And the need to be able to offer both remote learning opportunities for our families who wish to keep their students at home, as well as those parents who would like to have their children attend in person. It's important for us to have that ability to be able to create and provide that remote situation. I currently have 47 students on one roster and no less than 3 sections with 38 or more students. And so we want to stay in keep our students safe, and we want to be able to have our students return following our health guidelines. What this amendment would do would allow our secondary schools to continue with a hybrid model and create those classroom settings that would be both safe and honor the wishes of our parents who want to either take place for learning remotely or in person. So I ask you to support this amendment on behalf of educators who last March pivoted to remote learning and are preparing to pivot yet again. And so I want to thank everybody on the work that's already been done, but let's take into consideration that we want everyone to remain safe. Thank you.
Representative Baker, I believe the bill sponsors wanted a few more minutes to review the ladies' amendment, so the chair is going to temporarily displace it, but we will come back to it. Representative Brown is recognized to send forth Amendment ATC 21. The clerk will read.
Yes, thank you, Mr.
Representative
Speaker.
Representative Brown moves to amend the bill on page 2, lines 6 through 14, by rewriting those lines to read.
Representative Brown, the gentleman now has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. I want to echo Representative Adcock's thoughts about making sure that we're strengthening this bill to affect our teachers and our students and be able to provide for them the most effective method for in-person education if we're going to move in that direction. This amendment will give our local school districts the flexibility and opportunity to provide more effective and targeted in-person instruction for those students who have special needs, who are on IEP or 504 plans. Under this amendment, it's tailored in such a way as to give larger school districts or districts that have a significant number of students who are on IEP plans the opportunity to participate in in-person instruction regardless of whatever A or B plan the rest of the schools are on, as long as that instruction is called for within that student's particular IEP plan that's been designated to begin the school year. This will allow those school districts to mitigate the risk and better utilize their resources and benefit all teachers and all students at those schools, and it will make sure that we're able to give that adequate support and flexibility to those independent school districts. So I would encourage your support of this amendment and appreciate that on behalf of our students across North Carolina.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise?
Just to debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
So I appreciate the representative's comments and in the spirit of what she's trying to do. This bill is trying to cast a wider net for individuals with special needs because, frankly, many of them, a lot of them sit home and they don't have, a lot of them sit home and they don't have any interaction with others, frankly. And so the bill is attempting to cast a wider net. We should not lose sight of the fact that the parents remain in charge here. So if a school believes that someone who is coming in on Plan A really should be on a different plan, then the school, parents obviously know their children best. I mean, I think we all would agree with that. I would probably argue that our teachers probably know them second best because they've spent so much time with them. And so the beauty of this bill as written, which is why I don't support the amendment, is let's cast a wider net because there's more people than ever that need to get back in the classroom with special needs. And rather than trying to limit it, let's let that population go. And if the school believes that there's a reason that someone should not be on a Plan A, then all they have to do is reach out to the parent and describe and explain why they feel that way. And if the parent concurs, then the parent has the opportunity to make that decision. So I think we can still yield the same result that the representative is suggesting. I just think we'll go about it a different way by keeping the parents in charge. So for that reason, I encourage you to vote against the amendment.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Brown, rise?
Yes, I'd like to debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I appreciate your thoughts and the input on that, Representative Bradford. I think that one thing we need to make sure we're being very cognizant of is that a lot of times our parents are looking to our schools, and our schools are looking at this point to our General Assembly and several others to help guide them throughout this process. And we're looking at how this bill is written. I want to make sure that we're being very cognizant of the special needs of those students and ensuring we're taking care of those students and making sure we're providing for the students who need it most. We can all agree that this past year that our schools and our school districts, our teachers, our administrators have all been strapped, and they've all been going through a very difficult time, and resources are slight. So we want to make sure that when we're working under limited resources, we're looking to target those students who are most needed by this legislation. So there are some students who are on IEP plans who may only be in a certain class for 30 minutes out of the day. And where you're providing for resources, you're taking away resources from students who are in those classes for the entire day. So this bill makes sure that we have that flexibility to provide for those who are the most need when we're dealing with the issues that we're dealing with for the rest of this school year. And with that, I yield the rest of my time, and I would appreciate the support of the body on this amendment. Thank you.
And for what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise?
To debate the amendment a second time, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has for debate the amendment a second time.
Yeah, once again, thank you, Representative, for your remarks. You know, we have had months without in-school instruction. There's never been a greater time that we need to If we're going to take a risk here, let's take a risk of putting more kids back in the school, not less. And let's let the parents be a part of that decision. We are attempting to cast a wider net, and I will and the example the representative made, I understand, and so I'll use that example. There could be someone on an IEP that requires, you know, 1 hour a week for something specific, and in this bill, that particular individual would be on Plan A. So the school in that instance would likely just collaborate, which we should be doing, with our parents, because we want to do what's best for our children, our students, and say, hey, we have a suggestion. You know, Billy is on this IEP of 1 day a week, but he's coming in all the time. Is that, we think he doesn't need to, but we'd be happy to. And the parent may say, you know what, I agree. And the parent can make a different choice. So I still think we can get to the end result, which is why I would encourage you to vote against the amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Orange? Representative Meyer, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wonder if the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, would yield for a series of questions.
I do. Bradford, gentleman yield?
I do.
He yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Representative Bradford. Representative Bradford, I agree with you in spirit, in terms of the desire to get as many students back as possible. I have a question for you about, we have tried to work to figure out how to make this EC provision of the bill something that schools can provide, can feel like they can provide. And you've heard complaints, I think, from advocates, from folks advocating on behalf of students, and you've heard from school districts that this provision, the way that it's written, seems like it's going to create significant problems for them. And so my question is just, why are we going to proceed with this if it's not workable? You're saying we should take the risk, but this isn't about risk. It's about, are we going to do something that's actually going to work?
Mr. Speaker, may I?
The gentleman has the floor to respond.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Meyer. So this bill is putting the students first, period. I have talked to the groups that you cite about their concerns, and I have explained to them exactly what I explained on the floor. And their answer was, okay, we understand. So I'm getting a different set of answers, perhaps. I don't know how to reconcile that. But what I can say is, from someone, as you know, my work with the IDD community, this is, the spirit of this is to make sure we are not leaving any students behind. We need to bet on those students. We need to invest in those students. Schools have been planning to reopen for quite some time. Well, the time is now. It's time to let's go. Let's get this done. And so by bringing these students into Plan A could just surface issues that the school wasn't even expecting, meaning they may have just put them in a different bucket. This is a wider net. They deserve a wider net in this instance with what's been going on. To me, the result is the same. If a parent and the school agree together that Plan A is what's best for their child, then that decision can be rendered. Nothing is stopping that. And I always will find comfort in the student first and their parent second, and then the educator third, because they will know what's best for their child.
Mr. Speaker, may I debate the amendment briefly?
Representative Meyer, the gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Bradford, thank you for taking the time to answer my question. Colleagues, I'm likely to vote for this bill because I want kids back in school. I've argued that on the floor before. But there are a couple provisions of this bill that are the worst of what we do in education legislation, that we write a one-size-fits-all provision that doesn't work across lots of different school districts. And in this case, it has the egregious failure of failing students who have individualized education plans. Individualized is in the name. And yet we're trying to force them all onto a one-size-fits-all approach to getting them back. There have been numerous proposals of how this could be improved, and I'm disappointed that they're not. And I do think that this proposal from our freshman representative would make this a much stronger bill and actually have us get more kids back in the learning environment that is right for them. So I encourage you to support the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A4, set forward by Representative Brown. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. The noes do have it. The amendment fails. Representative Galliard is recognized to send forth Amendment ABN 13. Corker Reed.
Representative Galliard moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 32, by deleting the word 15 and substituting the word 21.
Gentleman from Nash, Representative Galliard, has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I think we actually do all agree that we want to see kids back as soon as possible in-person learning. We want it to be a safe environment for them. We want to return parents to their regular lives where they can actually go to work and not be concerned about their children and where they are. And I think we're concerned about teachers and their ability to go back and be treated as essential workers and have a good environment. And when we get done debating and we pass legislation, it gets handed off to the LEAs. It gets handed off to local communities. And there's something that we're not considering. What we're not considering is that not every LEA is equally resourced. Some superintendents are ready to go. A whole lot of superintendents are not. If you were to look at the years' experience of our superintendents, a lot of them are really new in their positions. Some school boards are ready to go. Some school boards are fighting partisan battles on how we do this. The reality of it is, at some point, as the General Assembly, we can't keep usurping the authority of who was elected at the local level to figure out how this work gets implemented. What this amendment does is allows those school boards that are not yet ready to go to figure out contextually how they implement this legislation in their local environment. The school boards that are ready to go, they go. And the ones that are not, they get a little bit more wiggle room so they can live out this legislation in a way that's going to be best for their community. So I'll stand for any questions, and I would ask for your support of the amendment.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise.
Let's debate the amendment.
Gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Representative, for your remarks. You know, I believe we have some of the smartest teachers and staff and administration running our LEAs throughout the state, so I have all the confidence in the world that they will be able to respond and reopen. After all, it's been about 10 months as we've been wanting to reopen, planning to reopen. This amendment kicks the can down the road another 6 days. If you put that in a percentage of academic days that are left in this current school year, that's about 10%, folks. 6 days may not sound like a lot, but we only have about 60-something days left. So I do not support this amendment for the spirit of it's time to get back to school now, pronto. So please vote against the amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Nash, Representative Galliard, rise.
To debate the amendment a second time.
Gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is not about intellect. I believe also that our local people are smart. They're well educated. I think their hearts and motives are right. But if your resources are different, you're not able to get across the timeline, the end zone, at the same pace. If you start one school at the 50-yard line and another school at the 20-yard line and say, run, it's not about how fast they run, Representative. It's about the resources they have to do the work. This does not hurt districts that are ready to go. It does not hurt. It acknowledges the fact that locally we need wiggle room. Locally, rural and urban are different. Locally, school districts are different. And there are going to be members within our communities that are not able to contextualize this legislation at the rate that we need them to, and we're penalizing them because they're not a better resourced LEA. I think this is reasonable to give people wiggle room and time, and again, I would ask for your yes vote on the amendment.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise.
Debate amendment a second time.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment a second time.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Representative. I feel your passion and enthusiasm, and I most certainly respect that. I just maintain that we need to open schools sooner than later. You know, teachers often teach problem solving and how to be creative, because that's what educators do. So now it's time for our educators and our staff to be creative and find a solution. If this is a problem, let's get reopened. So I encourage you to please vote against the amendment. Let's get these schools open. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A5. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. The noes do have it, and the amendment fails. Lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Hunt, recognized to send forth Amendment ATC 12. The clerk will read.
Representative Hunt moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 29, by deleting the phrase local school administrative.
Representative Hunt has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is in the spirit of casting a wider net and not leaving any children behind, as Representative Bradford said. It just makes charter schools included in this bill. I think it's very important that we not leave any students behind. I would appreciate your support.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise?
Debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Representative Hunt, for your amendment. So, as we all know, public school units, which includes charters, they have their own statutory guidelines. They have their own calendar flexibility. It's noteworthy that over 50% of charters have already been open. They've already been open. The unique thing about charters is, unlike LEAs, parents of students in LEAs don't get a chance to vote with their feet. If a parent is not happy because a charter school has not opened when they want it to be opened, they can vote with their feet by pulling a child out of the charter and coming into an LEA, which will now be open under this bill. So really, this is a non-issue. Charters are covered under a different set of statutes. This bill is for the LEAs only, so I would encourage you to please vote against the amendment. Thank you.
Further, for what purpose says the lady from Mecklenburg? Resident Hunt Ross.
Debate the amendment second time.
Lady has the floor to debate the amendment a second time.
I understand what you're saying, Representative Bradford, and I didn't know if you have children in charter schools or are very familiar with them. Those parents count too, and those kids count too. I want to make sure everyone is counted if this bill is going to pass and that we count every child. Thank you.
For our purpose, the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise.
Just debate the amendment a second time.
The gentleman's recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Representative
time.
Hunt. My children do go to a charter school, coincidentally. I maintain that no child will be left behind because parents, if a charter is not opening against that parent's wishes, they can pull their child to their LEA where it will be open. So they do have a choice. Please vote against the amendment. Thank you.
Does anybody else from Mecklenburg County wish to debate the amendment? Seeing not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A6. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. Noes do have it, and the amendment fails. I believe we're ready to go back to Representative Baker's amendment, so we're going to go back to that. It's already been read. Representative Baker, I believe the lady had finished making her remarks, or did the lady desire to continue speaking? If not, I'll recognize the next person in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to make clear a point about why I'm asking for support. What this amendment will do is give our LEAs the flexibility to create situations in which, again, we can meet the needs of our parents who want to return to face-to-face. We can also continue with remote learning while also adhering to the CDC health public health guidelines. And so, again, this creates an opportunity for cohorts to be created. It gives the LEAs the flexibility to do what is necessary for their particular districts as it pertains to returning to both in-face learning as well as continuing with remote learning at the secondary level. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wilkes, Representative Elmore, rise?
To speak to the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
With the amendment, after I read the amendment, first of all, what is dictating what is going on in the schools currently is the toolkit. And the big difference between Plan A and Plan B in the toolkit is the amount of social distancing. So when a local board is making that decision on to go to Plan A or Plan B with their older grade students, your 6 through 12, they have to bring into question how much social distancing can we do, okay? So the way this bill is structured currently is that a system would have the ability to make that decision if they can meet that social distancing requirement. So you can have a scenario in the state where you do have a smaller high school that would have the ability to meet those social distancing requirements under the current toolkit. So the goal is to try to give some local decision making on this issue. What this amendment will do is basically prohibit the 6 through 12 forever having that opportunity, even if the system could have it. So basically it is dictating from this chamber the choice that the system has to make. So it's eliminating that option if a system can obtain it. And I think it's been the spirit of both sides of the chamber on this issue, and even the governor's office, that he says that he wants locals making this decision. So I just don't see how this is helping locals make a decision when you're taking away options for maybe small middle schools or high schools that could meet the social distancing requirement that is in the toolkit. So I would urge you to oppose the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A3. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. The noes do have it. The amendment fails. Lady from Pitt, Representative Smith, recognize, send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Smith moves to amend the bill on page 1, lines 29, by deleting the phrase local school administrators.
Lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
I would like to not debate this amendment.
Is lady wishing to withdraw the amendment?
Yes.
The amendment is withdrawn by the sponsor and will be returned to the member. For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Von Hafen, rise? Or actually strike that. The lady is recognized to send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Von Hafen moves to amend the bill on page 1, lines 27 through 29, by rewriting those lines to read.
Representative Von Hafen, does this duplicate one of the earlier amendments? Lady wishes to proceed. We can't. It chair is just reading it right now. It appears it may have duplicated one of the other amendments. If the lady wishes to move forward, will the lady's recognized to speak to it?
I don't believe so, Mr. Speaker.
I'm sorry?
I don't believe that it duplicates
okay.
it, Mr.
The lady
Speaker.
Has the floor to debate the amendment.
Okay, thank you. This change will remove the language from the bill that strips the executive branch of the authority to close schools through an executive order. The governor needs to retain the ability to act quickly in case of one of the many variants of COVID-19 takes off and we have drastic community spread. This ability is needed for any other emergency, not just COVID, and this bill would take that power away from the governor. As a parent of three kids myself who have been in virtual learning for 11 months, I want schools to return safely just like everyone else has said today, but I also want the state to have the ability to make decisions quickly and efficiently in order to protect my kids, all kids in North Carolina, as well as the educators who teach them. So I ask your support for this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wilkes, Representative Elmore, rise?
I'd speak about the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
I would urge you to oppose the amendment just from a logistical perspective. When locals are trying to plan for a reopening, they have to have some guidance and a snapshot of what that guidance is at that particular time. The bill does address that with the toolkit that was the latest toolkit, which was done February 2nd. Also, they have to know that once the plans are started, that you're not on some sort of roller coaster, that you may end up having a change via executive order next week, or a change going the following week, or it's tweaked this way via executive order. As I said before, it seems like a passion of both sides of the aisle that we want locals to be able to make the decision. This takes that even further away from that, with the locals basically waiting to see what the next executive order possibly could be, and it blows up any planning that they're making to make these accommodations for the kids. So I would just urge you to not support the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A8. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Noes appear to have it. Noes do have it, and the amendment fails. For what purpose? The gentleman from Scotland, Representative Pierce, rise.
To ask the question once all the amendments have been taken care of. I don't know if you're at that point yet, but if not, at that point.
So I believe Representative Smith wants to send forth the amendment again, and so okay, I believe Representative Smith has decided to go ahead and proceed with the amendment, so the chair will allow that to come forward. That was amendment number 7. Chair directs that be back before the body. I believe the clerk's already read that amendment. And Representative Smith has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. I think everybody in here wants to reopen the schools, but the major thing is reopen the schools safely. And I've been listening to all of the debate about us getting the schools open and getting them open now and allowing the parents to just have the say. One of the big things that we're leaving out is a science. And so what this amendment does is make sure that we are opening schools based on ABC science that's consistent with the findings of DHHS and their current guidance. And so it eliminates Plan C, which would bring the high and middle school students under Plan B until DHHS provides further guidance for safety. So I have not seen that. We continue to talk about bringing the students back under Plan A, but that is not consistent with what is stated from the health professionals, and we do not want to exclude science. But this amendment also will add the data from LEA to be reported to DPI in partnership with DHHS and examine that data and report it back to us here in the General Assembly so that we can figure out how and what would be the best way to reopen in the fall. I just want to make sure that we're bringing our kids back in the safest manner possible. We want them to come back because we want them to learn, but we don't want them to come back at an unsafe manner and then jeopardize anyone, meaning students, teachers, or administrators. I would appreciate your support on this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Wilkes, Representative Elmore Rice.
To speak about the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
The first part of the amendment deals with things that we've already voted on with the other amendments in various forms, just all combined into one. The section that the member is referring to is the back one, which the last section where it's talking about the study and reporting back in. Duke University is currently conducting a study with our school systems, and they have been participating for quite a while now. One of my school systems, Alexander County, is actually one of the participants in this study where they're tracking transmission rates in the school. They released their findings this week and had a teleconferences. I should know this by now, dealing with Zoom and everything else. They have presented that this week, and they're finding little to none transmission from student to student in the schools. So by using that scientific study, I think that we're justified to take the action that we're taking now. Doing another study, I guess I've been down here long enough to know you don't want to get into the study realm because we can study something to death. I've seen some stuff studied for decades. So I would urge you, because of the first part, you basically already voted on at this point with the different issues. They've kind of combined into one. But the last part that's dealing with the study that she's speaking to, I think Duke University and the work that they've done, it's a world-renowned university, and what they've studied on this issue, I think that we could move forward with the way that our bill is structured. So I would urge you to oppose the amendment.
For what purpose does the lady from Cabarrus, Representative Baker, rise?
To debate the bill amendment?
Lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Smith. I really appreciate your attention to safety and the needs for reopening in that manner. And I share that concern. I would just like to speak about the safety concerns with regards to mental health and getting our children back into schools during their developmental period. That's a window that we can't replace. And so I don't think that we can overstate the concerns for the developmental window and also the concerns for children's mental health and safety. And so just briefly, you know, we know that at any given time, about a quarter of our children at least have anxiety and or substance use disorders. And of those, less than 50% get treatment, and that is at baseline. We also know that isolation increases dramatically issues of mental health disorders, substance use disorders, domestic abuse, which of course includes child abuse. And so I'm very concerned, and we don't know exact rates of suicide yet. We do know that during COVID, reports of anxiety and depression depression in young people have increased 30%, and that is survey after survey after survey. We are not getting them into our ERs because they're not being identified, and that's one of the great concerns because, as was mentioned, they're often identified in, you know, by in the school system and in adults with whom they interact outside the home. So, and I know a number of us have concerns for that. I think we're looking at suicide rates, and we still don't have those numbers yet. But I tell you what we do know, and we do know that youth suicide has been increasing. And in 2020, the calls to the Suicide Prevention Lifeline have increased over 11% from 2019, and that's in all of our 100 counties. So I just want to make a plea that I know so many of us in this room share on both sides of the aisle, that our children's mental and developmental health is critical, and our children who have special needs and are in special education classes are even more vulnerable. And so I just really encourage us to rally around the opportunity to get our children back in school as quickly and safely as possible. And I would urge you all to support the bill as presented by Representative Bradford. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Pitt, Representative Smith, rise?
To debate the amendment a second time, or, excuse me, to ask a question. And I guess it would be to Representative, not Baker, but Bradford. Yes.
Representative Bradford, does the gentleman yield?
I yield.
He yields.
My question is, this bill that we're about to vote on now, is it consistent with the health guidance of North Carolina?
This?
It is? Mr. Speaker, can I ask another question?
Gentleman, yield? He yields.
I do, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, I know, the question is, have studies been done in the state of North Carolina on middle and high school students when it comes to Plan A? Because I know it has been for Plan B. So has there been any studies done that you're aware of? Because I've not been able to find them.
Thank you for the question. I'm not aware of any study specific to Plan A in North Carolina. What I am aware of, though, is the studies that have, there's a plethora of studies which can be found cited on page one of the bill. So there is a lot of, we've heard a lot about science the last, well, I'd say 9 or 10 months, and so I agree with you that the science is important. There's a lot of studies that has demonstrated and cited in the bill. It talks about that. In fact, it's noteworthy that Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who is head of the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said last week that vaccinating teachers isn't a prerequisite to safely open schools as long as other measures are in place, including masks and social distancing. Of course, the toolkit that's already put forth that is referenced in the bill talks about a lot of those things. So I think this bill does exactly what I think you're seeking, by the way. So I hope that helps.
Okay. And I'll just now speak on the amendment, if you would allow.
Please recognize to debate the amendment a second time.
Okay, thank you so much. So you bring out a lot of good points, because we do look at the toolkit, and the toolkit does say for if they come back on A, there is a minimum amount of social distancing, but if they come back on B, there should be the appropriate amount of social distancing that we've all know about. So when I look at this bill, it allows us to bring our students back all under A, which is not consistent with what the guidelines have been given to us from those health professionals and from science. So I just want us to make sure that when we're trying to take care of our kids, we're trying to take care of our students, our teachers, we want to make sure everybody comes back safe, that we do that without us breaking the law, because that's not a good thing either. Thank you so much.
For what purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Baker, rise?
A question to Representative Baker.
Representative Baker, is the lady yield?
I yield.
She yields.
So I have a question. You eloquently laid out about the mental health issues, but again, speaking from my personal experience, that is one area that is underfunded in our public school setting. And so as we move forward, have we given any consideration to the fact that we still are not providing our schools with the additional...
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
Gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell has risen to a point of order. The gentleman may state his point of order.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would the representative direct her question about the amendment, not about additional funding and funding that is included in the appropriations process?
Representative Baker and the chair will simply apologize. Chair was conferring with the rules chairman as the lady was asking her question.
Okay.
So I would just ask the member, if the member would just contain any questions concerning the bill to this bill, or actually this amendment, as opposed to anything beyond that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
So I guess my question would be, is how do you see this bill not helping our students, given the mental health issues that you are raising? The amendment.
Yes, thank you. So I believe that we need to get our children back in school, and I believe that parents need to have the opportunities to determine, and that parents are the expert on their children. So I want to make it possible for all children who are able to get back in school to get back in school. Thank you so much for that question.
For what purpose, gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise.
Just to debate the amendment a second time.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment a second time.
You bet. Thank you, Representative Smith, for your comments. So the bill does obviously references the toolkit, and the toolkit does address both Plan A and Plan B requirements. So I believe it does exactly what you're asking, so I just wanted to kind of close the loop on that. But as far as the amendment goes, I would encourage the body to please not support the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A7. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Noes appear to have it. The noes do have it. The amendment fails. We have disposed of the amendments. We're now back on debate the bill. I believe Representative Pierce, gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to ask Representative Bradford a question, please.
So we'll redirect that. So at this point, the gentleman has risen to inquire to another member. Representative Bradford, does the gentleman yield?
I yield, yep.
And he yields.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Bradford. I think you did a lot of good work on this bill in a lot of places. But I want to ask, I've got two of my superintendents that have reached out to me early this morning from Scotland County and Hope County with a few questions. One that I know that our leader and others will talk about in their summation of this bill. Will the school systems have to ask the General Assembly to close down schools if there's a cluster outbreak? I'm reading a little bit, but will they have to come back to the General Assembly to close down the systems if there is a cluster outbreak? Because that's been brought to my attention, so I want to clear that up for my two superintendents who are listening this morning.
Okay, give me one second. The answer is no. We give them the flexibility to do what they need to do for a cluster. So, and that's in the bill summary. I think it's the last section. Thank you for the question.
Just follow-up question.
You have any other answer?
I yield.
Question?
Yes, sir. I yield.
So you would say if they work in partnership with the local health departments, that they could go with that guidance if that came up to be an issue?
Yes, the LAA has the flexibility to address cluster outbreaks, et cetera.
Thank you. Now,
you're welcome.
My leader will finish up. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Smith, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question, Mr. Bradford.
Representative Bradford, does the gentleman yield?
Mr. Speaker, I yield.
He yields.
You spoke when you first stood up to introduce the bill. You spoke in terms of it being a concerted effort between the governor's office and the General Assembly, and that everybody in the room wants to reopen schools, and I don't see that there's any consternation with regard to that point. My question to you is very simple. Then why do we need a bill? Because the governor has already stated that he is supporting the reopening of schools. I don't think you have any problem on this side of the aisle as it relates to reopening schools. So why do we need a bill?
Thank you for the question. So what I said was that this chamber had worked together, bipartisan support, and of course through the colleagues on the other side of the aisle, they were talking to the governor. In fact, I have an outstanding issue with the governor. I've not heard back from him myself. So that said, we need a bill because we need to take leadership as a General Assembly and mandate schools to open, because the governor has not done that. He has gone as far as to say we need to reopen, which is a wonderful soundbite. But it's time to reopen. So this bill makes it so. So that is why the bill is here. And I think just by way of the decision to move pre-K-12, which is Category 3, to the front-of-the-line vaccinations is a wonderful step forward. And so I would agree with you in that As soon as this bill passes, we would expect the governor not to veto it.
I'd like to debate the bill.
Gentleman from Wayne, Representative Smith, has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you. It's clear that there's no reason to have a bill on reopening schools because we all agree. The disconnect comes in how do we do that and what's best for our students, our staff, our teachers, our parents. And I humbly say to you that in a good faith, a fiduciary effort to try to reopen schools, we don't need to be restricted. We don't need to be mandating anything because there's no one size that fits all. The mandates that come from this hall, when I was a vice chairman of the Board of Education back in my district in Wayne County, we received a mandate from the General Assembly on a classroom size bill. That mandate turned out to be an absolute disaster because it came with no funding. And as long as we continue to mandate how people should run their school systems, and it's amazing to hear from that side of the aisle that we want to be big government and take over local decisions. That's amazing to me how that works, but that's a whole nother conversation for another day. But my point is, I don't see that we need to mandate anything if we're all in agreement that we need to reopen schools, and there's a much better way to do that by giving local school boards the decision, the ability to make that decision for themselves. And I believe local control is best under the circumstances. And I will vote against the bill.
For what purpose, the lady from White, Representative Von Hafen-Ross?
Question for Representative Bradford.
Representative Bradford, does the gentleman yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I yield.
Representative Bradford, I was wondering if you knew how many school districts in North Carolina are still all remote at this time?
I'm sorry, I heard most of that. Say that one more time.
How many school districts in North Carolina are all remote at this time on Plan C?
You know, I don't want to give you a number. I don't want to guess. That data is available from staff, but there are groups that are open and there are groups that are still remote. I just don't want to give you an accurate answer, so I don't know.
Can I debate the bill, Mr. Speaker?
Lady has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bradford. It was my understanding that yesterday in the Rules Committee, that question was asked to staff, and staff informed the Rules Committee that only less than 20 districts are now all remote, and almost all of those are already in the process of making plans to go back either on Plan A or Plan B. So really, when we think about all the discussion that we've had today about getting kids back in school, the vast majority, 90% or more of our school districts are already on Plan A or Plan B. So that's why this bill is just really not necessary. Our districts are already taking the action that they need on a local basis to make these decisions. And this bill is absolutely unnecessary and a legislative overstep. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Union, Representative Arprise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, my colleagues, I certainly respect everybody's position, but no one in here can really say that the state of our education system is good, that our children are learning, and that schools are open. This bill addresses that. Our schools are not open. To hide behind issues of funding is laughable. Last week, we passed $1.6 billion to aid our schools in meeting both the safety of our kids and students, staff, and opening the schools. The reality is the schools are not open, and our children are suffering, and our parents know it. And this is not a political football. Please pass this bill so our schools can open and our children can learn. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's to debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
What I want to say first to start off is I want to commend the education chairs. I want to commend House leadership for the efforts that you made to make this a truly bipartisan bill. I don't think that should be disregarded because we're starting session. This is a contentious issue and contentious for the right reasons because we've got two sides that have different beliefs and different views right now about what's safe for whom and what's the best way to get the exact result that we're all trying to get to. Every last one of us in this chamber and in the chamber next door and in the executive branch want to get our students back in school. We have disagreements about what would be considered safe to do that, but I want to start off making sure I am clear that our House leadership and our House Republican education chairs have gone through a lot of effort to try to figure out if we could come together. And what happened today is what sometimes happens. Sometimes we're just going to disagree. I appreciate the debate. It has not been condescending. It has not been demeaning. It has not devolved into something political. It has been sincere debate about what the differences are. I stand to ask that we vote against this bill, not because I doubt the efforts that have been made, not because I doubt the good intentions, not because I think that somebody is wrong and I am right, because all I can do is debate from what I see and what I believe and what people that I trust see and believe. And I will tell you that it is a hard debate for a lot of us, because as the rules chair and I were talking yesterday in some efforts to try to figure this out, I think we both agreed on one thing out the gate. If this was a criminal law bill, we would stand up and tell you guys what to do. This is not a criminal law bill. We are not education experts. We have to depend on education experts and health experts, more importantly. All of us want our children to be safe. All of us want all of the school personnel to be safe, because I think sometimes that gets lost here too, is when we talk about students and teachers, we don't talk about all of the people who have to work in a school environment once schools reopen. And I think what a big difference of opinion is, number one, obviously we have a difference of opinion about the ability to react to a pandemic. This is a case of first impression, as many judges would put it. Nobody's been through a pandemic. Nobody knows what the right answer is. 10 years from now, none of us are going to know if we made the right decision. We're going to hope we did. We're going to hope that we did the best by our constituents, but we have no idea. A lot of people who will be voting along with me against this bill believe that in these circumstances and in all emergency circumstances, we have to cede some power to the executive branch. The legislature is an incredibly powerful branch of government. We like to pretend that we have three co-equal branches of judgment, but the truth of the matter is every decision made by the executive branch, every decision made by the judicial branch ultimately can come and be changed in this body. So we already have an incredible amount of power. But we have that because we are the most representative branch of government. But what happens at that time is that means that we sacrifice the ability to be nimble. And that is where a huge difference is in our beliefs about what should happen in emergency circumstances within the state. I just don't have faith, not because I don't have faith in these individual members. I think a lot of you have become experts in areas of government and understand things and have the best interests of your constituents at heart. But all of you recognize that at different points in time, each one of us within our caucuses, not even talking about going caucus to caucus, within our caucuses, have had pretty heated and impassioned arguments about what the right decision is. So now imagine when people are dying, when hospitals are overflowing, that we've got to make the decision that got made last year, and that was the initial shutdown. And I'm telling you, I shudder to think what would happen, not because we were bad intentioned, but because we would have had to figure out some way to get 61 people here, to get 26 people over there, and then the executive branch to all agree what the right decision is. And I just don't believe that would have happened, and I think we would have lost people at an exponential rate. And so that brings us to today's legislation. If one, this bill now takes the governor's ability to shut down schools if, in fact, we have another breakout. And we're all comfortable because we've got a vaccine. And I am happy as I can be that we've got vaccinations going. And I hope everybody within the sound of my voice is getting their vaccine as soon as they can. But all of us who have ever dealt with science know that as soon as you get a vaccine, viruses are worse than some businesses. It's like they're already, like the viruses got together and said, you know what, we're coming up with another strain. We're going to fix this problem they got. They think they're stopping us with this vaccine. We're coming right back. And that's what's happening. So what happens if another strain starts going through our school system? We got to come back. And I asked this question in rules yesterday to make sure I was clear, so I'm misstating. We would then have to come back. Schools can shut down short term. But then we got to get this body back together to decide if we need to shut down schools again. And Representative Bradford was correct. We're already eating into a school year. So now imagine sitting around on that decision and imagine how much damage could be done. Think last year with the shutdown. If shutdowns didn't happen all over the country, the damage that was done in 20 to 30 days and the people that were lost. Now, for them, some of us, that's not a big deal. And it's not because we don't care, but because we didn't experience a lot of those losses. But I can promise you, for people who lost family members during that time and who are still losing family members to this virus, that was a big deal to them. And again, transfer from K through 5, we've got pretty definitive evidence against. But this bill actually does not allow us to coincide with health guidance. And that's from the Academy of Pediatrics, that's from DHHS, and that's from CDC. It actually does not allow us to comport with that because it's telling us to send teenagers back in as if they don't have a different transmission rate into Plan A, and that is actually against health guidance in what we read the health guidance to say. So if you combine those two factors, to me, that's plenty enough to vote against the bill, not because we don't want to get people back in school, but because the risk is not worth the reward. Be very clear. I'm a parent of two children who are sitting in school right now. So for some of you, you got grandkids in school. Some of you don't have kids in school. For those of us who've got kids in school right now, I promise you, we would love to see our kids sitting in a schoolroom not now. Not because we're sick of them. We love them. But because that's where they get their best learning. Because learning isn't just about hearing a teacher talk. Learning is interacting with the teacher. Learning is interacting with your students. Learning is going to school and saying hello to your friends. Learning is not being in a house isolated by yourself for months on end. So trust me, we're with you on that. And I appreciate the efforts that you made to try to make sure that this was a bipartisan bill and to try to see if we could get something that the governor could find acceptable. We didn't get there. So I ask you to vote no. Let's keep working. If this bill fails today, the governor's already put stuff in place so that people can reopen. There's nobody that wants to reopen that can't really reopen right now. It will be uncomfortable, but they can reopen. But if this bill fails today, we can still get right back on this weekend, just like Jeffrey Elmore did with Rosa Gill and with the governor's office and with everybody else, and keep working to get a bill that everybody can agree on, because we were so close on this one. So please, let's keep this spirit going. Please vote no on the bill today. And then all of us pledge to keep on working as soon as session is over to try to figure out a bill that we can all live with and that doesn't give us the one size fit all that we're doing right now, that acknowledges that we've got other problems we've got to address. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise?
Speak on the bill, Mr. Speaker. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to address some of the comments I've been sitting back and listening. Is first and foremost, this bill is not against anyone. It's not against the governor. It's not against teachers. It's not against anyone. But let me tell you what it's for, and nobody's touched on this. It's actually a health care bill, if you want to think of it that way, because it's for the health of our kids in the classroom. It's for their mental health of the kids in our classroom. It's for the physical health of the kids in our classroom. It's for the educational health for the kids of our classroom that are falling so far behind. And you may or may not understand this, but there's actually thousands of kids that have just disappeared off the program. They're not attending, whether it be virtual or in person. That's what the bill is for. It's for their mental health, their physical health, their educational health. And I would also remind, based on the North Carolina Constitution, that the full responsibility of educating children in North Carolina rests at our feet. It is our responsibility. And we are taking that responsibility in an effort to get our kids back online so they can reach their American dream. I appreciate if you support the bill.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Haywood, Representative Pless, rise?
To make a comment as to the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Heard numerous comments about the ability to reopen, and that's not true. There's nothing that is being done right now that allows schools to reopen for my superintendents. I've spoken to two of them. They're begging to get their kids back in school. The comments I get are, we're running out of time. If we're going to educate these children to the level that they're at, we have to have them back in the classroom. This is not working. We're prepared. We're going to do everything to safeguard these children and these teachers, but we have to have them back in front of us in order for us to be able to help them. This is not something that came about as a power struggle, in my opinion. This came about to try to do what the people are asking, and that's what we're all here for. I was sent down here to voice the concerns for the people. I've heard several people say that their school districts are not ready. If there was something already in place that would allow these decisions to be made, opening or not opening, we wouldn't be here today. I urge support for the bill because my students in my area, parents, teachers, the administration, they're all asking for it at this point.
For what purpose does the majority leader, the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, rise?
To debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our schools are essential, and our children matter. Today we're voting on a bill that does exactly what this constitutional body is instructed to do. Representative Torbett mentioned it, but I'll actually read it. Article 1, Section 15 of the North Carolina State Constitution states, the people have the right to the privilege of an education, and is the duty of the state to guard and maintain that right. This is exactly what that bill does. It puts a plan in place to reopen our schools in a safe and secure manner. And last week, we made sure that school systems could do that by appropriating an additional $1.6 billion in that effort. Like you, I've received the emails, the phone calls, I've had conversations with constituents. I've talked with local school board members throughout my district and throughout the state. I've listened to teachers that are in the classroom that are actually fearful for speaking up because they'll get attacked by political activists. I've seen the billboards going on in Mecklenburg County and throughout the state. I've seen the social media posts. And they're all saying, please do what you can to open our schools and help our children. You know, when I leave this building, first thing I do is take this tie off and I go home. And when I go home, I lose the title representative and I become dad. Actually, to be honest with you, I try to get them to call me Mr. Leader and the Honorable. That actually went very poorly at my house. But when I go home, I watch my daughter who started kindergarten this year. And she is excited. And when I get home, I watch her struggle learning how to read online. And she's trying hard, but she is struggling to learn how to read online along with her classmates. And she asked me, she says, Daddy, when am I going to be able to go to school more than 2 days a week? And my answer is, hopefully, baby, soon. Hopefully soon. See, she wants to learn. She wants to see her friends. And she truly loves her teacher. Like you, I've listened to the experts. And from the onset of this pandemic, I've heard over and over again, science and data, science and data. Even Governor Cooper has said, we are using science and data to make informed decisions on how to move forward in the reopening process, whether schools or businesses or overall. We've heard it over and over again. Well, the science and data is very clear. Schools are safe to reopen. To take it even further, President Biden, Governor Cooper, Secretary Cohen, the CDC, university studies from all over the country, all say it's safe for our students to return to the classroom. Secretary Cohen even took it a step further last week in the Health Committee meeting by stating, the head of the CDC just announced yesterday to reinforce vaccines are not a prerequisite for getting back into the classroom, and the data in North Carolina reinforces that. Governor Cooper said in a Facebook post a few weeks ago, "Research continues to show in-person learning can happen safely if schools follow safety measures." Today, Governor Cooper is calling on K-12 school districts to allow in-person learning for all students. You know, we talked a little bit about today and throughout the committee process about the what-ifs. And the what-ifs are key because this is where we have the debate. So I'm asking you, what if 41% of all public students, public school students in North Carolina do not have an option for in-person learning? Of those 20 school districts I mentioned that are still in Plan C, they represent 41% of the student population in our public schools do not have an option for in-person learning. What if mental health issues among our student population is drastically increasing during this pandemic? We touched on that today as well. What if over 50,000 students have walked away this year alone from our public school system? 50,000 students and growing. What if over 10,000 students in our public school system are unaccounted for and our school districts have no clue where they're at? What if in places like Wilson County, right next door to me, reported nearly half of their 3rd to 12th grade students have failed at least one class while taking virtual learning this last year? What if some of our elementary students in low-income households are balancing their virtual schoolwork while looking after their younger siblings because their parents have to work and they can't afford childcare? What if a large portion of our EC students, some of our most prized students throughout the state, aren't getting the services that they deserve and are entitled to over the last year? And what if struggling parents, struggling working parents, are at their wits' end trying to do everything they can to make sure their children actually get a solid education? These are not what ifs. That's what's happening in our state right now. But there is a what if. What if we fix that today? I read an opinion piece in the News and Observer. Some of you are actually in the press I actually read. But I read the opinion piece in the News and Observer, and it was titled, "Private School Students Flourish as Public School Students Fall Behind." And the writer talks about the challenges of her own children because she's a private school teacher and she's actually watching her own children in public school fall further and further behind during the pandemic. She ends the article by saying, and I quote, "What's happening in education in our state is not fair. While students in private schools and pods are progressing and thriving, our children in public schools are getting the bare minimum. How much longer will we let our children endure this injustice? When is enough enough? Our schools are essential and our students matter."
The question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 37 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Bell, the House Majority Leader, is recognized to announce the proxy votes of the Republican members.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Ted Davis, aye. Representative Kelly Hastings, aye. Representative Brennan Jones, aye. Representative Larry Yarborough, aye. Representative Lee Zachary, aye. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Reeves, is the gentleman ready on the Democratic members yet or still working on that?
In just one second.
Yes, sir. Advise the chair when you're ready.
We are prepared, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Reeves is recognized to announce the proxy votes of the Democratic members.
Thank you. Representative Ager, no. Representative Alexander, no. Representative Alston, no. Autry, no. Brockman, yes. Carney, no. Cunningham, no. Fisher, no. Graham, yes. Hawkins, no. Insko, no. Lucas, no. And Terry, no.
The clerk will walk the machine and record the vote. 74 having voted in the affirmative and 44 in the negative. Senate Bill 37 passes its second reading and will be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 37 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senate Bill 37, having passed its third reading, is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate by a special messenger. Members, that, of course, concludes today's votes. The chair is unaware of what the Senate is going to do, if the Senate is going to concur or not concur, and that will determine next week's business. Assuming that the Senate does concur with the bill, we will not have any recorded votes on Monday. If there is a non-concurrent situation, there is a possibility that a conference report would be eligible for consideration on Monday. So apologize, I can't advise members if there will be votes yet Monday or not, but certainly members would have an op. We would know that presumably that earlier that day. So to err on the side of safety, the chair is going to set session for 7 p.m. Monday evening, and would encourage all members to monitor your emails and contact. We'll certainly make sure that we let the House Minority Leader, the House Majority Leader know where things stand, because otherwise we would not have to have any recorded votes on Monday. With that, notices and announcements. What purpose of the gentleman from Wilkes, Representative Elmore, rise?
Announcement, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor.
I would like to announce that the proper paperwork has been filed in the clerk's office for the formation of the Arts and Arts Education Caucus. This caucus will be co-chaired with myself and Representative Carney. I wanted Representative Carney to be able to make the announcement, but she was unable to be here and asked me to make the announcement. The mission of this is for members of the House to understand the economic, education, and civic impact of the arts industry in North Carolina. We've had excellent participation in the caucus in the past. We've had 47 members join in last session, and we hope that we have that level of number again this session. Representative Carney's L.A., Beth LeGrand, will be sending out an email to everyone, and if you will respond back to her if you would like to join the Arts and Arts Education Caucus. We would really appreciate it, and Arts Day is just around the corner coming up, which they are developing a real robust virtual event that will span 2 days with that. So exciting things with it, so I would encourage you to join the Arts Education Caucus. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. For what purpose the gentleman from Davidson, Representative Watford, rise?
Announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Local Government Committee will meet next Tuesday at 1 o'clock in 1228. Local Government Committee. Thank you.
For what purpose the gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Just like to wish Jimmy Dixon a happy birthday. This is, I think, the 26th anniversary of his 50th birthday. And just know that he's molded me into the legislator I am. So if you got problems with me, you know who to go talk to. You know who to go talk. But happy birthday, Jimmy Dixon.
Mr. Speaker, what purpose the gentleman rise again?
Just to mention also that I understand there is some cake over in the conference room beside Jimmy's office, and I'm sure he doesn't want to eat it all, so all are welcome to come and eat some cake, some birthday cake.
There. Any further notices or announcements?
Seeing none, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House do now adjourn to reconvene Monday, February 15th at 7 p.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Bumgardner, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Monday, February 15th at 7 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. We stand adjourned.
Special message from the Senate, Senate Chamber, February 11th, 2021. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate failed to concur in Senate Bill 37, House Committee Substitute 4th Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to provide access to in-person learning for students in grades kindergarten through 12, and request conferees. The President pro tempore appoints Senator Ballard, Chair, and Senators Heiss, Lee, Harrington, DeVere, and Clark on the part of the Senate to confer with a light committee appointed by your honorable body, to the end that the differences arising may be resolved respectfully. Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate, that message is noted. And on motion of the Speaker, the following conferees are appointed for Senate Bill 37. Representative Bradford, Chair, and Representatives Elmore, Blackwell, Destin Hall, Bell, Sane, Torbett, and Willingham. The Senate will be notified.